Hello, friends. I am Cindy Thompson, and this is a Resilience Project. This is a space where stories are shared and possibilities are discovered. I invite you to partner with me in cultivating resilience among humans, one conversation at a time. Over the course of my career, I have sat with several individuals who are at various stages of grief and loss. Walking alongside someone through grief has to be one of the most privileged roles we could have as a human. It's not easy to witness the degree of pain that loss can bring, because we can feel helpless and naturally wish we could help relieve the hurt and devastation. Today, I have the opportunity to be in conversation with two amazing women, Shelley Buck and Kathy Curtis, who are willing to talk about their personal experiences with loss, but also provide a message of hope. It's difficult to suggest that Shelley and Kathy were inspired to write a book to honor Ryder Buck's story, because at first blush, there is nothing truly inspiring about loss. What we hope to share with you in this episode, however, is the way in which we can continue to remember well, while also learning to keep that light on of the person who has passed. As a mother, Shelley speaks to her journey with Ryder and what she has been discovering since Ryder passed away at the age of 22. Shelley and her husband Chris Buck, director of the Disney animated movie Frozen, and Ryder's two brothers would have been on a massive roller coaster of emotions as Ryder battled cancer, only to get hit by a car months later. As a parent, losing a child to death is one of our greatest fears. We do everything we can to protect our kids, constantly mitigating potential risks as they grow. Learning from Shelley and her friend Kathy on navigating these waters is where we can hear the story of love, courage, and spirit. In this episode, Shelley and Kathy share their connection as lifelong friends and how this connection became a catalyst for even greater meaning. When you hear their story, it is fascinating to connect the dots and discover a deeper purpose within their friendship. I appreciate the vulnerability and wisdom these women are willing to share with you and in service to helping others. There is no question that Ryder's story is meant to be shared. So Shelley and Kathy, thank you so much for being part of a Resilience Project.
Well, thank you for having us. We're happy to be here.
It's great to be here. Thank you, Cindy.
Wonderful. And I love that I'm uniting two very close friends from across the country in the U.S. that get to see each other here today as part of this conversation. So we've got a lot to talk about today, and I know that you've written this beautiful book, Leave Your Light On. And this is about Shelley, your son, Ryder. This is inspired by his story. But I'd like to start by the fact that I understand the two of you have been friends for many, many years, since maybe around 12 or 13. Would you tell us about how you got connected at the beginning?
Would love to share that story. My family moved into Shelley's neighborhood. We were both 12. And my dad told me in the car on the way over there that there was a girl on my block that was my age, and I would have a ready-made friend. And I thought, I was in seventh grade. I mean, that meant a lot to me. So we moved in, and day after day after day went by, and no friend came over to say hello. And so I finally marched over to her house and knocked on the door. And her mom was so sweet and welcomed me in and took me up to her room, where Shelley sat reading the book, The Hobbit, which I didn't know anything about, but she quickly shared, you know, the magic in it. And it was just, you know, fantastic story. And she was awkward and I was awkward. It was like the bond happened instantly. And so my family then moved away again about 4 years later, right toward the end of high school. So Shelley and I, you know, got to bond, and then our lives went on different paths. So she followed her dream after college of moving to California to work for Walt Disney, who had already passed, but she had just been a lifelong fan of the magic of Disney. And I pursued art and writing and just went into more of a marketing and communications at a corporate level kind of kind of work.
Okay.
Spent a lot of years doing that, moving around the country. But Shelley and I were joined at the hip all through that. She got married. I was in her wedding. She had children. I went out and met them. And so along the way in my corporate life, I felt this calling to share with people the power of writing and art and things like that to help them deal with some of the things that they were going through in life, from emotional issues to physical problems, you know, illness. And I kept getting in front of audience after audience. And then my mother died, and I kind of did the same thing that I was teaching other people to do with my grief. I wrote about it. I found a tremendous healing through that. And so that kind of took me on a new path. And so I tell you all that because I want to give some of the magic in Shelley and I meeting when we did, how we did, and reacting to one another the way that we did. Because when her son went through the challenges that he went through, and when it went where it did, like, I was so ready in every imaginable way to support her through that, from helping her deal with the grief to ultimately helping her write the book. So that's our story. I mean, that's really the destiny of it. And there's way more to it than that, but that's the magic.
That's a beautiful story. And I love the theme of magic, because I can hear the passion that that has for both of you, the imagination, the creativity. And so really excited to learn more, even from the two of you today. Don't you love those friendships that have been around for that many years, and someone who just truly knows you and has known you over the years, over different stages? So you've kind of grown up together.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It's a real gift, isn't it?
Yes. It is. It is.
I'm going to come back to how you came to write the story together. But I think what's important is to have you, Shelley, to share Ryder's story and his journey through cancer and what that was like for you, what you noticed in your learnings along the way.
Okay. Well, Ryder was born an old soul, very wise and mature beyond his years, and continued on that way through the antics of being a high school student and pushing the boundaries and so on. But I'll cut to the turning point in our lives that was the most profound, which is one day he called me and said, "Mom, I have good news and bad news. What do you want first?" So I took the bad news, and he said, "Well, I have cancer. But the good news is it's a kind that can be cured." So that was his attitude, and that became my attitude. Mm. We never entertained the idea that he might die from cancer. We always looked at the success as the goal. And of course, it changed our lives. Everything began to revolve around Ryder and his journey. And I had one son away at college at the time and another one in high school. So I definitely split between the hospital and home with my responsibilities, but I leaned heavily on the coaches and the directors, theater and choir, to kind of keep an eye on my youngest. And I spent every day that Ryder was in the hospital at the hospital with him, to the consternation of his doctor. I mean, at one point he finally said, "You're still here again, you know?" And I was like, "Of course, you know, he's stuck in a bed. I want FaceTime with my grown son."
Yes.
And I wanted to be there and be in the know. So I did a lot of research. I was always on my iPad, and I kept a journal from the time he was diagnosed all the way through his cancer treatment and beyond. Now, we had some ups and downs during the cancer treatment. I mean, he was inpatient for 1 week and then out for two. And as soon as he felt well enough, he was off and running. He went hiking, he went surfing, he went to concerts and baseball games and all sorts of things that gave me fits. You know, it was like, there are germs there, there's no cell reception here, there's rattlesnakes in the mountains. All these things that could worry a person, you know, weighed heavily on me. But the doctor said, "You're going to have to let him be a man." And that was a tall, tall order. I mean, he was 22 when he was diagnosed, and so the leash had already been lengthened. But at this point, I had to almost drop it. and let him just run the show from being tethered to the chemo and so on. So we went through the chemo. He was given a short reprieve over the holidays where they thought he was fine. And then through testing, his numbers came back higher and we had to go back in for four more rounds. So that took us from August all the way through May. And he was finally cleared, which was
beautiful.
Huge celebration. Mm-hmm. And he has had a band. And so he scheduled gigs in between his chemo rounds and he kept the band going, bald or not, he was on stage. He continued that through that summer, went to Bali for a world music class, which was for a month. And it was really difficult to let him go. At that point, I had not yet really let go of the bond that we'd formed during his treatment. But we did. We let him go and he grew exponentially. I mean, he had already been studying the spiritual masters, but his time in Bali opened him up to a whole nother culture and approach to God and even the beyond. Mm-hmm. So he came back with a new sense of self and himself in the world and in the broader picture.
I'm just wondering if there was a piece of you could look at that season and go, he needed to do that. He needed to get out to the mountains. He just knew what he needed going through cancer. Mm-hmm. Like you said, he got better and he would get stronger. And then he just knew what he needed to do to fill his soul.
That was exactly what he was doing. And that was exactly what gave me permission to let loose, because he was feeding himself with the nurturance that he needed to get through the treatment. Though it was hard to see him fly out the door at 10 o'clock at night, not knowing when he would be back, came home refreshed, renewed, and he would often do something rather grand the day before he went back into the hospital for another week of treatment. So keeping track of him was a challenge and cheering him on was something that I had always done, but it was a little difficult because I was at cross purposes here. I Sure. wanted to protect him and yet I had to let him fly. So
yeah,
we enjoyed several months, about 6 months of his good health and his constant performances and interactions with the family were richer because we were all so grateful for our health, but specifically for Ryder's.
Absolutely. I love the name of his band, by the way, Ryder Buck and the Breakers. And so they would do concerts for cancer survivors. Is that right?
Yes, they did. Ryder went and performed for cancer survivors. And then after he passed, his band went and performed again for the cancer survivors at a local hospital. Ryder's idea had been to do that at the hospital where he was treated and go in, or Children's Hospital, which is also local in LA, to go in and play for the kids. And he also wanted to take his golden retriever in as a therapy dog because he enjoyed that day so much during his week inpatient, which we ultimately did with the golden retriever who came after his. Hmm. We trained him to be a therapy dog. And so we fulfilled that wish.
So I'm so glad that Ryder got to do what he could during his time of wellness, that music was a big passion for him. And I could hear the kind of person he certainly was as well, in that that was his heart to also give back and make a difference mm-hmm. for others.
That was his purpose in life. He wanted to inspire other people through his music. He found a band while he was in the hospital that really lit him up, and Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros. And he followed them and drove up the coast to see them and dragged me to a concert. It wasn't a hard drag. I was really enthused to go at the Hollywood Bowl. I think he got to see them three times. And the last time he got to meet everyone backstage, he got to tell his story about his cancer and how they had gotten him through it and inspired him. And he kind of wanted to fashion his own band after theirs, which was one of inclusion of all different types of musicians and a spiritually uplifting message. So he was working on that and writing his own music.
So can you take us through, he had about 6 months of really good health and he was cleared from the cancer. Would you walk us through that, Shelley, to help us understand what happened next?
Well, his last weekend he spent at an Edward Sharpe concert. They had a 4-day concert in LA and he made it to 3 of those days. And like I said, he told his story to a crowd of thousands and was wildly received. And then he got invited backstage because he had impressed the band and they were interested in his story. So he met with each of them and spent quality time and spent hours and hours after the concert was over, came home about 3 in the morning, just jubilant. He said, "Mom, I've just made best friends for life." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, kiddo, that's amazing." Because I knew he had connected because that was what he did.
Yes.
He would really listen to people and make those deep connections. And they were profound because of the journey he'd been on. His philosophies had expanded and his spirituality had grown. So he had a lot to share. And the following week, the week after that concert, he was hit by 2 cars as he walked home from his broken down car on the freeway in the middle of the night, in the middle of a dense fog. And I didn't know until the California Highway Patrol came to the door the next morning and asked if he lived there and if I was his mother. And my husband was in New York. My other son was in Europe and my youngest was the only one home with me. So we went to the hospital, talked to the surgeon and got the news.
Devastating.
Devastating is just putting it so lightly. I was destroyed. We had to, of course, call my husband and I was so out of it. I said, "You know, just stay, finish your publicity meetings. There's nothing to be done here. He's gone." And he said, "I'll be on the next flight." Really, you know, basically, yes. Are you crazy? But we went from there and we established a music scholarship at the high school in Ryder's name. And we installed a bench on his favorite mountaintop where he used to go and meditate and write songs and woo the girls and just look at the stars and be in nature.
Well, and I just want to honor, Shelley, that the roller coaster your family was on through the cancer, through the chemo. Like, nobody wants to hear that their young adult or any child has cancer. And so from that point to riding through his treatments to him saying that, you know, "Mom, this is the curable kind," but you still, I'm sure, hold your breath not knowing. And right. So every step you had so many ups and downs within that, seeing that he was going out and still enjoying his life when he could. And then getting the clear, okay, he's through the cancer, he's doing better. I can't imagine the roller coaster you've been on to then arrive at that night to discover he had passed.
Yeah, it was such a shocker because he was just launching. I mean, he was going into the studio to do some recording the next day. He had lessons to give that day. He had just met his musical idols and had made a connection with them and was following up with them. And yeah, it was just devastating and beyond belief, just beyond belief.
Well, and I want to certainly recognize for the listeners that 8 years have gone by, and I appreciate that you have written this book, and it really helps keep Ryder's legacy going. And every time you talk about him, whether it's on this podcast or other in forums, you get to tell the story of your son and the time that he had on this earth with you and how he was such a bright light. I can hear that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me how the two of you then came to write this book together. I'm really curious how that conversation went or what inspired you to write it.
Well, I'll start and then I'll let Kathy take over. After Ryder passed, we got several messages from him. "I'm okay. It's wonderful beyond words here. I want you all to be happy." Then he said, "Mom, I want you to tell my story." And I realized, you know, this meant writing, and I don't consider myself a writer. I kept a journal, which was exhaustive, but I called Kathy in a panic. And
she said, you know I need to get a ghostwriter, but I mean, I don't even know where to begin. Do I need to go to New York City and find people? I mean, she was just really hysterical. And I'm sitting on the phone, and I had published a book of my own, and I did writing for other people on their books. And I did a lot of work with people, getting them through their grief. And I'm thinking, God, what are the expectations she's got for a writer? And I finally said, well, what about me? And she's like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm staring right at it. And I couldn't see it. So that was kind of a funny moment that launched the whole writing of the book. But we did work with her journal. It was the foundation of everything that we were able to pull from. And we decided that telling his story, just doing what she put in her journal, would not capture the light that Ryder radiated in his life. And so we wanted to kind of change it into a narrative where the story of Ryder's light could be the message. And I think we both feel that we did a good job of doing that.
What stood out for me when you said that, Kathy, is that she saw you as her friend first, that right. You guys have right. Such a deep friendship that she just knew who you were as a person, not necessarily what you did.
Yes.
And so it took a bit to realize that you already were right there, ready to go and know her so well to be able to help tell the story.
Right. Yeah, there couldn't have been a better person. I mean, Kathy knows me to my core. She knows Ryder. She knows the family. And she'd been through the journey with us. So nothing needed to be explained. The material was already there in both of our hands, just waiting for us to shape it.
And what a gift for you, Shelley, to have one of your closest friends who has experienced grief, who has been writing about it, and has been developing certainly some ways of helping people work through it. So you had many gifts right there in your friend ready at your access.
I did. And yeah. I can't imagine this journey, but I can't imagine my life without Kathy, because she's been a part of it for beyond the vast majority of my life. We've been best friends. There was a moment when we would go for months without talking. You know, I was in college, she was in college. And one day I picked up the phone to call her just out of the blue. It had been about 6 months and she was on the other end of the line. Just amazing.
Wow.
That connected. Yes. So,
yeah. And that's real for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think the listeners are going to want to hear what kind of messages you got from Ryder. I don't want to brush over that. I think that's really important, because I've met many, many people over the years who have been afraid to tell me that they do get messages from the person who's passed. And that is a thing that happens for many. And I wonder if you would share a little bit about that.
Well, Ryder came in many forms. I mean, because there's such a thing as a Ryder truck, they started popping up all over the place. And his friends would call me. I saw a Ryder truck. I saw a whole line of Ryder trucks. The ways he got through were when his band would play, there were lights that floated through or shot through the frame of my camera. No disco balls in the place and no flash bulbs. These were floating lights. And, you know, I watched those again and again, and they happened repeatedly. I talked to an astrologer who said, you know, Shelley, you and Ryder had this connection before he was even born. And there was a contract there that you both agreed to that said his life will not be a long one.
Oh.
And that was an eye opener. I talked to a couple of psychics who got messages from Ryder very directly, very much Ryderisms that, you know, couldn't be manufactured. They were just too authentic to be anything but Ryder coming through and saying what that side was like for him, with pulsing colors and constant music. And he appeared in visits. I won't call them dreams, because they were more real than dreams, to both my husband and myself. What else, Kath? I know you've got some in your...
Well, I mean, she has, you know, a friend who gets messages from people on the other side in the middle of the night that come in like a fax, and got many from Ryder, and she would get up and write them down and then share them with Shelley the following day. I had many as we worked on the book, but long before we worked on the book, I was standing in my bathroom one day just getting ready, and I kept hearing, "Leave your light on, leave your light on, leave your light on," over and over and over. It was like an earworm. I couldn't get rid of it. And at that time, I knew that he had written a song by that title, but it still was a little bit confusing. Why am I hearing this? So I reluctantly pick up the phone and I call Shelley and I say, you know, here's what's going on. Does it mean anything to you? And she goes, "Oh my God, he had a lava lamp in his bedroom that she had never turned off in the years since he had passed. And the night before, she felt like she should be able to turn it off. And so she turned it off. It didn't feel right to her. And after my call, she turned it back on." So I think it was a multi-layered message from him, but definitely felt like him nudging, because Shelley had a harder time believing and catch. It's just like she couldn't see me for the writer that I was. And she couldn't see the things that were coming to her in the right way. And that happens a lot with people. I want to make that point. The programs that I've done with people, I focus a lot on this type of thing because it does happen and it is healing. If we can learn to, you know, acknowledge it and see it for what it is. But there are people who cannot get there. They try too hard, or they're afraid, or I'm not really sure what it is, but it happens and it will happen. But they have to kind of get out of their own way. And so for a long time, I think Shelley was able to take it in from other people, but still felt like Ryder wasn't really connecting with her the way that she wanted until one night.
One night.
Yes.
One night I went to bed and I was at my wit's end. I really wanted to feel him and hear from him. And I just asked him for a sign. And I thought maybe he would visit me in my sleep. But at 5 o'clock in the morning, the computer went off and it was one of his songs playing at full blast. Now, I had not been on the computer watching his videos or listening to his music. In fact, I don't know who the last person on the computer was, but nobody would have done that but me. And it hadn't been me. And there he was just playing this song and waking me up. And I smiled through the rest of that day and the next. It was a, "Hey, Mom, you know, I'm here. I'm here for you." And nobody else woke up. It was, it was just for me.
Yeah, those are such cool moments. I've got goosebumps as I hear you tell it. So I appreciate your sharing those pieces because those are very special. And you can hear the hope that it gives you. It's like he's okay. And
oh, yeah.
It's still a connection. So my sense is that's a big part of this book as well. Part of your messaging in the story, in the book, is helping people to find that connection even after a person is lost.
Yes. And you know, I don't even say lost anymore. In the beginning, I might have, but because he's so present, I don't feel like he's lost to me. Yes, I can't see his face, but I can hear him talking to me. I can feel his presence in a palpable way. You know, I mean, I can feel his arm around my shoulder. I can hear what he would be saying, and I'll talk to him and he talks back. And I don't think I've gone off the deep end. I think this is all very legitimate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it speaks in my mind to your healing after loss and what that has brought for you as his mom. And if there was some wisdom around resilience here that you would want to share with our listeners on navigating passing of a family member, someone very close to them, what wisdom would you have for them?
Well, there are several things. One is doing everything you can to commemorate the person. I mean, Ryder had music, so we produced 3 CDs of his music, but the scholarship was set up, the bench was installed, the CDs, the book was written. You don't have to write a book, but you can write, and that is enough. It is healing beyond words. I mean, I can't stress it enough, and Kathy can speak to that better even than I can. Being open, and that's a tall order. You can try too hard, as Kathy was explaining, but just being quiet and feeling the person, I believe they're there and that they want to get through. So giving that the opportunity to happen, both of those things, and telling their story. It's sometimes you have a ready audience in a friend who will just sit and listen, or we'll share stories, which is even maybe better because then you're getting something back. But what do you think, Kath?
Well, I think of a couple of things. The thing that worked for me when I was going through grief was writing letters to the one who had died and really believing that they were going to hear everything that I said. And also, when you're writing, you say and think differently than when you're talking. And so things would come out on the page, and I would feel the power of it, like having my mother hear me. But then I also allowed her to write back because I got a nudge, and I felt crazy, and I did it anyway. And that was the most profoundly healing thing for me, which then enabled me to work with other people and give them the same opportunity. And it's just like you develop a way of spiritually connecting that is very helpful when you're going through grief. And I know that Shelley has done that. I think, you know, the writing of the book was a profound journey for her that came in layers. But, you know, this is kind of a tricky thing to talk about. Grief can make you not want to live anymore. Mm-hmm. And Shelley, being the completely wide open book that she is, made that very clear to me, that she wanted to be with Ryder. And I don't place judgment on that, but I also know that it's a delicate time when your grief is that profound. But to pretend you don't feel that way, I'm not sure is really healthy. And that she felt comfortable enough with me to say that. And I just kind of created the space where she could live with that statement. It scared me, but it's a message for me to be there and to show up and to keep guard on her. Like, I think having someone walk that journey of grief with you is so important. And I know a lot of people are really uncomfortable with that, but I wouldn't have given up 1 minute of my time in that journey with her.
I really appreciate your mentioning that, because I too have heard that from many people in my counseling practice as well. And it does exactly that. It speaks to the despair of that moment in time, and you can't see beyond it in that true, deep sadness. And I want to honor that for people because it's real, but you're right. It's so important to have somebody hear it, not to have it go underground, to not feel embarrassed to share that, but to find somebody you trust that you can share it with. And my hope is that listeners are also grabbing a hold of a piece of this to say, what can I do? If my friend is saying that, what can I do? And usually it's just holding space, finding out what they need and listening to them and hearing it. And that helps them work it through.
Right, exactly. And doing the podcasts over the past year on top of writing the book has been exponentially healing and therapeutic for me, because I'm able to tell Ryder's story in all of its different permutations. and we never cover exactly the same material twice. So there's always an opportunity to dig a little deeper and get to know him a little better. I mean, I feel like he's on my shoulder all the time when we do these, and it's a great way to connect.
Well, and for that reason, I'm so honored that we get to be in this conversation, to share your experiences together as friends, as a mom, Shelley, to give hope to other moms out there or other parents, family members, because your other two sons also were going through that with you. And it's a family grief, and each person has their piece of it. Is there any other pieces of insight or wisdom you would like our listeners to know?
You know, I would like to say, and I hope this is helpful, when my mother was attempting to break through to me, like I kept getting signs and messages and I kept going, oh my God. And then I would talk myself out of it. Like I would try to be rational, like, oh, that can't be. And the day I decided to let her write back, I felt particularly crazy that day. But what allowed me to do it, and I'll never, ever get over how grateful I am that I moved through that moment, because I remember saying to myself, what if she really is trying to reach me and I keep shutting her down? What if that were me and I was trying to get through to her and she kept denying it? I just decided right there and then, I don't care what it says about me. I'm going to trust and I'm going to just believe that if I get a random synchronistic thing happen, that it did come from her, and I'm going to honor her. I'm going to say, Mom, I hear you. And I think that the healing power in that for me was really big. And so if I could encourage anyone else to shift their thinking if they need to, if they're like I was, like, oh, I know, but it can't be. You know, just that way we talk ourselves out of it, I think it could help.
Yeah, I love that. Because I too have recommended writing to the person who has died. And yet I had not heard that piece of really just sitting quietly and letting them write back. So I love that. Thank you for sharing that, Kathy. I think that's really rich. Shelley, how about from you? Is there anything else that you can think of you'd want the listeners to hear?
I would like anyone who's going through the challenges that we went through with Ryder when he was in his cancer mode to allow the child or the patient or the loved one of whatever age to be in the driver's seat as much as possible. With children, it can be, what toy do you want? What crayons do you want? With an adult child, it's, you know, where do you want to go to eat? Or you want tickets to this? Okay. But when they're in a position like that, they feel so out of control that allowing them to have some leadership in their lives is so empowering and so healing and so helpful and so counterintuitive for someone who's a caregiver and wants to do it all. That and listening, just really listening with your heart, because that gives them space to come in and be present again.
Yeah, I love that. Well, and as with the story of resilience, I think about how often it's in hindsight that we look back on our learnings. And it's when we've come through hard times that we might then reflect on our strengths, on the wisdom we've been gaining along the way. And I can just hear what the two of you have been learning, not only as friends, as you've written this book together, but the insights that you've gained that you can now share with others.
Yeah, we have shared a profound path in life, and it's, to feel that you were meant to be there doing that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really great.
And trusting that, right?
Yes.
Yeah. We could probably talk another hour because there's so much that I would have loved to have covered, but I just know that we want the readers to pick your book up, to hear your story, to learn about Ryder even more deeply, and hope that it will bring inspiration to others who will read it as well. And I just would love to hear his music. I'm going to search that out and see if we can grab a clip of that as well somewhere.
He's available on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon carries his music. It's under Ryder Buck.
Excellent. Love it. Well, ladies, thank you for being here on A Resilience Project. It's been truly a privilege to chat with you today and to have your insights, your wisdom shared with our listeners.
Well, thank you, Cindy,
for being here. Thank you.
Yes.
My pleasure. It is not unusual that I reflect on an episode like this one and wish that we could have had an extra hour or two to dive further into some of the guests' insights and learnings. I trust that if there's even a spark of interest for you and you want more, you will order a book for yourself. Here are some of the learnings worth reiterating for you from this episode. When you have experienced a loss, do what you can to commemorate that person. This can be done through a variety of means. Shelley mentioned the bench that they had placed in one of Ryder's favorite spots. Telling his story by doing this podcast or capturing Ryder's music on CDs. Also, writing is a theme that seems to have helped both women at various stages of adversity. Whether it was the journal during Ryder's cancer treatments, writing a book such as this one, or Kathy's book titled Invisible Ink, this process has become one of the most commonly mentioned resilience practices for many of my guests. Also, continuing to tell the story of your life with that person, while also encouraging others to tell their stories and experiences. This can be critical in working through grief. In addition, writing a letter to the loved one, and maybe even several letters over time, provides an opportunity for you to communicate with them. A second piece of this is to also create space to sit quietly and allow space for the loved one to write back. Just see what comes up for you. In addition, remaining open to the possibility that you may receive some form of communication from your loved one after they have passed. This may not feel like something you want to believe in, but it is fascinating to hear of so many of my clients who have also had these similar experiences. What I notice is that it doesn't matter what I might think or anyone else, but to recognize the value and peace that this brings for that person and that it could bring for you. Depending on your beliefs, this may feel out of your comfort zone, but I invite you to remain open to the possibilities. Just listen with your heart. Also, having someone walk through the journey of grief with you. This can be a counselor, a pastor, friend, or family member. It is much harder when we try to do it alone. And as I've mentioned in some of these points that the lady spoke about, it's also helpful to have someone work through it with you. Shelley also had some suggestions and recommendations for navigating cancer treatments when you have a friend or family member going through the process. She suggests it is important to let them be in the driver's seat. There is no magic wand or quick fix for grief, but as you've heard in this conversation, you can draw on the people who have gone before you on their journey through loss. What I loved about Shelley's memory of walking Ryder through his cancer treatments was the time spent just being together, while also allowing him to really live life fully when he could. These are times that are never regretted. I would like to leave you with just a couple of reflective thoughts. First of all, what are you doing each day to live your best life? We don't know how many days we have, but we can make today great. Secondly, do you have the faith, courage, or strength to set aside your needs or fears in order to let your loved one live their best life? Because we don't know what they need right now, but they do. Thirdly, what elements of faith have you had that helped you through a difficult time in your life? Finally, my friends, I hope you too will leave the light on, remaining rooted in the belief that each one of you matters, and even after we are gone, trusting the memories of our time spent together will also continue to live on. I would also like to dedicate this episode to my good friend Brigitte Labar, who passed away suddenly in August. Brigitte, your time on this earth continues to burn bright. Thank you for listening to this episode of A Resilience Project. We would not be doing this podcast without you. If you or someone you know has an inspirational story or is helping to build resilience in their community, please email me at cindy@aresilienceproject.com. In fact, email me either way. I would love to hear from you. My hope is to feature an episode periodically on your letters of resilience. I'm very interested in hearing your story of how you have tackled hard things and what worked for you. With your permission, I hope to share some of these stories along the way with our listeners. Also, check out my website, aresilienceproject.com, to learn more about our amazing guests. Your presence here is important because together we are cultivating a village of resilient individuals. You are creating a space for their stories to be shared and a sacred space for learning to occur. I also have a favor. I would love for you to go to your preferred podcast platform, rate and review the podcast so that we will know how we're doing. I also would like to express my gratitude to the amazing team of volunteers that have jumped on board to support this project. You will find each of those beautiful people on my website on the team page. As you go about this week, I invite you to think about one way that you can continue to grow your resilient muscle. What is one thing you can start with today? See you next week.